Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Luke's English Podcast. This one is episode number 220, and it is called A Cup of Tea with Corneliu Dragomirescu, also known as the Son of the Dragon Tamer, or the guy with the longest name ever on Luke's English Podcast. This is one of those episodes in which I invite a friend onto the podcast and we just kind of chat about various things. I like these episodes because it gives me a chance to get to know someone on the podcast and I feel like I'm an interviewer. And you can listen to some natural, free-flowing conversation in English. Let me tell you a little bit about Corneliu. He is a filmmaker and comedian, originally from Romania. He lives in France now, where he writes, directs, produces and acts in films and television projects. Corneliu is a polyglot, which means he speaks a number of languages, including Romanian, French and English. He's a movie buff, which just means that he loves films and he knows lots of stuff about movies and films and things. What's the difference between a film and a movie, Luke? Well, they're the same thing, all right? A movie is just American English, film is British English. Some people might say that we use the word film in a more serious way, and movie refers to the more kind of Hollywood popcorn kind of thing, you know, the sort of film you watch when you eat loads of popcorn on a Saturday night, just sort of frivolous entertainment. But really, it's British and American English. Although lots of British people say movie as well now. For me, a movie is a kind of popcorn film, and a film is slightly more serious. Anyway, they're quite interchangeable. So Corneliu is a bit of a movie buff. He knows lots about movies and films, and he loves talking about it. And he's an all-round great conversationalist, and therefore, he's the perfect guest for another episode of Luke's English Podcast. Corneliu also has the longest name of anyone ever to appear on Luke's English Podcast so far, I think. His name, that's his first name and his surname, but not including his middle names, just the first name and the surname, that has 9 syllables in it, Corneliu Dragomirescu. And as far as I know, that is the longest name so far on the podcast. Not that it's a competition or anything. I mean, that's not the purpose of Luke's English Podcast. We're not here to just find the guy with the longest name. No, but still, it is an achievement of sorts. Speaking of competitions, by the way, thank you very much for voting for your favourite recordings in the Your English Podcast series, episodes 211 to 218. I'm getting votes all the time. Voting closes at midnight Paris time on the 30th of September this year. That's 2014, just in case you'd forgotten what year it was. Or maybe you're listening in 2015, that's quite possible. In which case, sorry, the voting is closed. But it closes at the end of September 2014. And then I will count the votes and announce the winners. That's right, winners, S, with a plural there. I've decided that there will be a winner from each episode. Okay, that's just how I roll. That's how I do things. I call the shots here at Luke's English Podcast. I've decided that because there were so many entries, I feel like it almost like it would be a little unfair to just have one person. So because there were 8 episodes, I'm going to choose a winner from each episode and they'll be featured in some kind of interview situation in the future where I'll have a chance to find out a little bit more in conversation with those winners from those episodes, okay? Also, if you were wondering about how I will be counting votes, and if I can prevent people voting for themselves again and again, well, I can see unique codes for every person who comments. So I know when comments are coming from the same computer again and again, all right? So I'm not going to count votes which are obviously repeated votes from the same person on the same computer. It might be possible that some people are sending votes from the same computer or the same internet connection, because they're members of a family or members of a company or students in a school. But I'm keeping an eye on the where the votes are coming from, all right? So if I see repeated votes that are obviously from the same person, then they won't all be counted. Sometimes people vote more than once by accident because they type their comment, enter the comment, and it doesn't appear immediately. It has to be approved by me. So sometimes people will vote and they'll think, why didn't it work? And they do it again. In that case, I consider those to be accidental repeated votes and I don't count them all, it just one. So if you're worried about all of that kind of thing, like people voting again and again for themselves, then you can put your mind at rest because I'm keeping an eye on it. It's not going to be an issue. Okay, so if you had been thinking about that, don't worry, everything's under control. Thank you too if you left a comment on my last episode, which was all about Scottish independence. It was quite a popular one in terms of responses and comments. It's great to see that lots of people are interested in this subject, and it's also interesting to see that many people are observing parallels with the situations in their countries too, in some cases. The referendum is going to take place tomorrow in Scotland, and we are all waiting with bated breath to see what happens. Will Scotland leave the Union? Is the UK as we know it going to change forever? Will Scotland and the Scottish people make the right decision? Only time will tell. I expect that by the time you're listening to this, the referendum will have been decided and you'll know. But as I'm recording this, I don't know, and it's very exciting to wait and see what's going to happen. Now, let's get back to this episode. Corneliu is an awesome bloke with a proficient level of English, and I'm really happy to have him on the podcast. I invited him into the flat and onto the podcast with the intention of asking him some of the usual questions, you know, such as what do you do? How did you manage to learn English to your current level? Could you tell us about the common myths around your home country? And we ended up chatting for something like 2 hours and got sidetracked by all kinds of interesting things, including films, his son, the fall of communism in Romania, and things like 90s pop music. In fact, it felt like it was kind of hard to contain the inspiration in this episode. We were both quite enthusiastic about the things we were talking about, and so the conversation flowed very easily, and I hope that comes through in this episode. I did say that it was 2 hours of conversation, so naturally I've divided this into two episodes. This is part one that you're listening to now, and part two will be uploaded soon. Sometimes I find it a little bit tricky to begin episodes of the podcast. You might not realise that, but kicking off an episode can be quite hard because I need to make sure that I don't ramble on too much and I keep it brief. Often I have to kind of work out a little introduction, especially when I'm involved in a conversation. But in this episode, in this conversation with Corneliu, we'd already been chatting for over a pot of tea for about half an hour, and I just hit the record button mid-conversation. So we just hit the ground running at the beginning of this episode. What does that phrase mean? Well, if you hit the ground running, it means that you start when you're already moving. You start something when you're already in progress. Imagine sort of hanging in the air, running, like your feet are dangling, you're running in the air, like it's a cartoon or something, and then you fall, and when you hit the ground, because you're running, you immediately shoot off. So that's to hit the ground running, okay? And that's what happened in this episode. I mean, we weren't hanging in the air running like some weird psychedelic cartoon. That would be strange. No, what I'm saying is that we hit the ground running in this episode because we were already deep in conversation and I just hit the record button. And that's why the episode begins quite abruptly, just in the middle of a conversation, all right? You will hear a bit of strong language at the beginning, so be prepared for that. I say the F word quite early on. What's the F word? Well, it's the word fuck, isn't it? I mean, it's quite silly for me to call it the F word, but I suppose that's just a way of referring to the word without actually saying it, because as you know, this is a very rude word, which you shouldn't really use because it's not big and it's not clever. I realise that I've just used the word myself just a second ago, which kind of defeats the purpose of warning you about the word in the first place. You know, like, be careful, this episode contains some strong language, including sexual swear words such as fuck, bollocks, wanker. So be prepared that, you know, that may cause you offence. All right, I realise that it probably wasn't necessary to use the word in the warning, but I've done it anyway. So I actually use the word in the form of a noun phrase. So I say the phrase a fuck-up. Okay, that's a noun phrase. If you make a fuck-up, or if you make a couple of fuck-ups, it means that you make a mistake or make a couple of errors. Okay, so a fuck-up is a mistake or an error. It's a noun in that case. It's a noun phrase. All right, now there's also a verb phrase, a phrasal verb, which is to fuck something up. And if you fuck something up, it means you do it badly, you make a mess of it, you make an error and ruin something. Oh, I really fucked up this cake. I'm trying to cook a cake. I'm trying to bake a cake, but I think I've fucked it up. I put too much sugar in it, for example, and just ruined it. It's interesting, isn't it? The F word, the word fuck. Let's not beat around the bush. The word fuck is a very versatile word. It's used in loads of different ways. But remember, just because you've heard me using it here on Luke's English Podcast, it doesn't mean that you should start throwing it around in everyday conversation. All right? I'm sure that you know that. I don't mean to patronize you. I'm sure that you're aware that it's a rude word, but I just felt it was necessary to say that at the beginning. Anyway, I'm going to stop rambling on now, and it's time to join my conversation with my friend Corneliu. And here it is. I normally start and make a number of fuck-ups at the beginning.
Right, on purpose.
Half on purpose, half by accident. Sometimes I do it again and again and again, and I get so frustrated. I did an episode about Monty Python just a few days ago, and I just couldn't start it. It took me about 10 attempts to make a decent start.
Because you were the bar was so high.
Yeah, exactly.
The Monty Pythons. How do you address that? How do you talk about them?
I know.
How do you even pronounce Monty Python?
Well, I mean, I'd worked that out, but I just couldn't. It was like there was this big wall that I had to climb over.
Right.
Which was, how am I going to get across to my listeners that Monty Python is a thing that they should, you know, even now I can't explain it.
Yeah, but can you explain why they're coming back?
Why?
Yeah, like, can you explain that?
Can I explain
nobody?
The reunion.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think there's probably two reasons. One of them is because they fancied doing it again, and they wanted to relive their youth and be funny again. And the other thing is just the money.
Yeah, obviously.
I think they just need to pay their bills.
Yeah, and ex-wives, and maybe Terry Gilliam will do another couple of movies with that money. So
let's hope so.
Yeah, positive. In Romania.
Yeah, did he make them in Romania?
Last one, Zero Theorem, was shot there.
Really?
And I'm curious to watch it just because of that, to see if... Does it show? Can you tell it's shot in Romania?
I've no idea.
Not?
I haven't seen it.
That's what I want to discover.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's very hard with Terry Gilliam's films, because he's got such a unique visual style that it's difficult to identify exactly where one of his films was made. You know, it's just a Gilliam movie. It's not necessarily a sort of... just a movie that's clearly in one place. I mean, it's just in Gilliam land, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the case. It's a kind of fantasy world being compared to Brazil. So,
which is a movie and a country, but we're talking about the movie.
If you have Terry Gilliam and Brazil in the same sentence, there's chances that you're talking about a movie.
Yeah.
Or about football.
I imagine that many of my listeners aren't aware of the movie Brazil by Terry Gilliam, who is one of the Monty Python team. Right now, I was intending to begin this episode with a kind of introduction. We've kind of hit the ground running, as we say.
Yeah, sounds like I was willing to kind of help you talk about Monty Python. And so
that's
I think we've at least that we've covered.
I think so. I think we've dealt with the Monty Python bit a little bit there at the beginning, at the outset. I was saying that it's difficult for me sometimes to start episodes of Luke's English Podcast because I have to do the introduction a few times before I get it right. But I think I'm going to go with this one, Corneliu.
I'm impressed.
This is the first take.
Yeah.
And we're going to keep going, all right?
Amazing.
So, ladies...
We're moving on.
We are.
Yeah.
We are. We're moving... The podcast is rolling, maybe rolling down a hill at this point. We don't know.
Aren't we all?
It's moving in one of the directions. I don't know how many directions there are in the universe.
That's a tough one. I didn't prepare. I was good in physics, and I wouldn't venture now with just an off-the-cuff answer. I would need to prepare that. So, if you want to do a physics episode with me, I'm all for that.
Yeah.
But we'll have to prepare it.
Do you like physics?
I was kind of, into that because in high school I was preparing for medical school. So you had to be good in physics. And I also had a very good teacher in high school. And a great guy who also knew how to tell a story, and because we were also talking about teaching methods. And that certainly was one. He had a sense of humor, but he wasn't pushing the humor. He was pushing the stories.
Yes.
About himself, about the great physicians, about, anything. And that was great. He was a great storyteller.
So your physics teacher was like particularly good teacher because of his ability to tell stories. Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's one of the important skills that a teacher should have is the ability to try and tell a story. We'll come on to teaching stuff in a minute. I think I should probably explain to my listeners what's going on. I mean, I think that everyone listening to this, I think generally what's going on. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast, and I'm talking to a friend of mine who's sitting right next to me here. We're drinking tea. We're drinking some Japanese tea. How is it? Are you enjoying this tea?
It's great. It's great. I can feel it already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How does it feel to drink tea?
I don't miss the coffee anymore.
Really?
That's how good it feels.
So it's an adequate replacement for coffee.
Yeah. No, it's a very interesting taste because there's some rice in it.
Yeah, this is Japanese genmai cha, which is genmai tea. I'm not sure what genmai means, but anyway, it's just the name of this Japanese green tea. And it's a combination of like green tea leaves and some roasted rice as well. Roasted grains of rice, and it results in a sort of green tea with a slightly roasted flavor to it. And of course, because it's got nice quality sencha green tea leaves in there, it has the refreshing quality of green tea.
I couldn't describe it better. I didn't know I was drinking all that.
That's
my reaction.
It's a complicated fusion of many different ingredients, the result being it's refreshing and it's good for you. A little bit like Luke's English Podcast, Corneliu. See, that was my segue. That was my way back into introducing this episode.
I salute that.
Thank you very much. Right, so you're listening to Luke's English Podcast, and joining me here today is my friend Corneliu. Now, how do I pronounce your surname, Corneliu?
Dragomirescu.
Dragomirescu.
Yeah, pretty good.
Thanks.
Good.
Well, I didn't know, I needed you to say it first.
Yeah, but no, I mean, I don't expect here in France or in any other place in the world than Romania, I don't expect an accurate pronunciation. So since I've lived outside of Romania for a while now, I'm in peace with it. So,
do people get your name wrong?
Yeah, mostly. But really? It's also, I can't blame them because it's so long. And so some of them maybe start well and kind of give up in the middle, and I understand that.
Yeah, really? Is that what happens?
Yes, because people try. Okay, they hear the name once and try to reproduce that. Maybe the first letters, the first sounds are okay, but then it crumbles.
So it's like Corneliu Dragon.
Yeah. Because they feel the rest is superfluous. It's now already. 4, 5, 6 letters, I think they feel it's enough.
That's enough. How many syllables are there in Dragomirescu? Is that 5?
Yeah, it sounds like. But I know there's...
Say it again for me.
Dragomirescu. Yeah,
okay.
That's it. 5.
That's quite a lot of syllables.
I'm okay with it.
Me too.
Yeah.
The more the merrier.
I mean, you were good. You're in the top five.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I don't believe that.
No. It's true.
I had an advantage, though, Cornelia, because yeah. I asked you to say it first. I didn't attempt it without any preparation. Yeah.
But it shows that you're a good listener. You know, you have a good ear.
So I suppose so.
Just that was enough.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much. Does your name mean anything, Cornelia Dragomirescu? Does it have a meaning?
Well, I was not very preoccupied by that. Obviously, there are Slavic roots, Dragomir, and Escu being kind of a typical Romanian way of constructing the family names.
Yeah, yeah.
But a friend told me a few years ago, that a Polish friend, that it can be translated as the son of the dragon tamer.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. And so now, even though I think it's bullshit, I'm going with that 100%.
Corneliu, the son of the dragon tamer. Yeah. Have you ever tamed a dragon? Has your father ever tamed a dragon?
My father, yeah. I can, you know, I'm way softer than that.
Really?
Yeah. But he probably has. I don't know. He's a surgeon.
Your dad?
Yeah. So probably that was part of the ongoings of surgery over
right.
the years.
So he helps people with surgery, but he may be able to use his tools to tame dragons.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's probably the accurate description.
Okay, all right. So with me here, as you've worked out already, because I've said it a few times, is Corneliu Dragomirescu, which may mean Corneliu, the son of the dragon tamer.
Yeah.
I'm going with that.
Yeah.
That's fine.
It's the best version that I know.
So how do we know each other, Corneliu? We know each other from the stand-up scene in Paris, don't we?
Sure. It's been a couple of years now,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah. And we performed together on several shows.
Yeah.
And it was just last Friday that we appeared together
yeah.
on a show.
That's right,
so,
yeah.
So we're fresh of that experience.
Fresh from the stand-up stage there at the Sceaux Gymnase in the center of Paris. So I've known Corneliu a couple of years now, just from the stand-up scene in Paris. You're good friends with Sebastian Marx, who's
right.
been on this podcast
right.
several times. Basically, sort of, we always end up having these interesting conversations before, during, or after shows, usually after shows when we go to the bar and have a few beers. So we often have these sort of interesting conversations, often revolving around learning English or movies. Those are that seem to be the two most common
yeah.
subjects. Also, I know that you're from Romania, as we've just said, but you've lived in the United States, I believe. You lived there for a year, you said?
Yeah, well, the thing is that I moved to France 10 years ago, but during this time I also spent a year in the U.S. and been traveling for shorter periods, but that's, yeah, kind of the past 10 years have been away from home.
Yeah.
And probably now they're at home, since my new home now is France, at
yeah.
least for what I know now. I don't have plans to move. But
what brought you to France in the first place?
I guess I've always been sort of an admirer of French culture and cinema in particular. Since I had studied cinema, I was going to have a career in this field. And I was also at that time disappointed with how things were going on in Romania.
Yeah.
I had started working in the cinema business,
yeah.
had a few experiences, but they didn't feel very comfortable, although probably I was advancing in some direction.
Mm.
Then I said, well, I gotta try this, let's do it, and so just moved. And of course, there were years where I studied again, and then started working, and in the meantime had this... U.S. parenthesis.
Yeah, you had like a little break of a year in the U.S.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're a filmmaker. That's like your career, basically. Is that right?
Yeah. That's let's say that, because I'm also working as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
But if we want, we can include all that in the filmmaking experience, and not generally when you say filmmaker, many people think of the director, but
yeah.
I think this is a generous term that can include different capacities, screenwriter, etc. And so let's include all that in there. Mm-hmm. It's a package, and that's me.
Okay, so you're involved in some form in the making of movies, either as an actor, as a director, as a screenwriter. Yeah. Okay, great. And you also do stand-up, as we know. All right.
But so I wouldn't include that in the filmmaking experience.
No, because it's a separate
entity
yeah. of its own, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. No, it's a thing.
Stand-up is a thing.
I would include many things in stand-up.
Yeah.
But so you see how generous that thing is.
Absolutely. Stand-up is like a multidisciplinary art form. Would you say that stand-up is an art form?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because now I'm doing it, so I can debase it.
Okay, all right, great. Movies, stand-up, from Romania, lived in France 10 years now, a one-year break in the US. This is still the introduction, Cornelia.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you also have learned English to a high enough standard to allow you to perform stand-up comedy in English and to be very funny. And you can also talk nonsense with me while drinking beer. So your English is at that level where you're able to talk crap with me.
Yeah, and here I need to express my gratitude towards you for allowing me to do that.
For allowing you to talk nonsense with me.
Yeah, because you're a well-known nonsense talker.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of honored to share those moments.
Well, of course, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's always fun to talk nonsense. I mean, I could just sit and talk nonsense on my own, and I do occasionally. I mean, obviously into a microphone.
Right.
But sometimes even when there's no recording equipment, I'm just on my own, I'll just talk. Not that much. Don't worry, I'm not mentally ill, not as far as I know.
I don't want to judge that. I'm not judging. No. Even if you were, I would still praise you.
You still
that.
Respect me
yeah,
for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So I'm able to talk nonsense on my own, but it's always nice to talk nonsense in company with a friend.
Absolutely. Since, I mean, you and I discovered that over time, you have a very in-depth knowledge of a certain type of cinema that I also like. But you're going into a frame-by-frame, gesture-by-gesture analysis sometimes.
Certainly.
And I'm fascinated by that. And I remember the first time I became aware, I think we were talking about Die Hard, the original Die Hard movie.
Right.
And then, of course, we recently talked about Taken because you were doing a famous bit on Taken in your act, and that was a very impressive discovery.
So my listeners, they don't know that I do something about Taken. I outed you as a Taken
oh,
that's great.
Commentator.
I just haven't managed to get around to it yet. I've been meaning to do an episode, a whole episode of Luke's English Podcast, all about the movie Taken, because it's just an incredible piece of cinematic history, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to go too much into it now, but I love the film Taken, but I also kind of hate it as well.
Right.
I've got this weird love-hate relationship with that film. My listeners might not know what it is, but it's a sort of cheesy action movie starring Liam Neeson as a kind of... What is he? He's like a sort of secret agent.
Yeah, kind of... retired.
Secret agent who's got a teenage daughter, and his teenage daughter decides that she wants to go traveling in France, in Paris.
Big mistake.
And Liam Neeson's like, no, Kimmy, you can't go. And he decides that she can't go because it's too dangerous, because of course she'll get kidnapped, right?
Yeah, it's Europe, it's France.
It's dangerous. I know the world, Kimmy. I know how dangerous it can be. You can't go. You'll be kidnapped and turned into a sex slave. You know, that's what he thinks, but...
Revealing the whole script, actually.
Yeah, he kind of gives you the whole plot before it happens. But it's the whole... Of course, she then goes to France, and what happens? Yeah, she gets kidnapped, naturally. And then the rest of the film sees Liam Neeson attempting to rescue her.
Yeah.
And how does he rescue her? He goes to Europe, and he kills everyone.
Yeah, mostly Albanians, though.
Is it Albanians?
Yeah, that's kind of a relief for... us other, you know, Eastern countries.
He focuses on the Albanians.
For once, you know, we're...
See, this is one of the problems that I have with this film, because it's impossible to spoil it, first of all. I can't spoil the film, because it's a very enjoyable ride. It's a crazy you know, action filled ride, and it's sort of, it, but it very cynically pulls at various emotional strings as a way of justifying all of these acts of senseless murder which he commits. I mean, he kills these people, but I think as an audience we are expected to not only accept what he's doing but agree with it. Why? Just mainly because he loves his daughter so much,
right?
And like, you know, the film exploits our basic emotions. The emotions are, well, of course we understand the love that a father has for his daughter, and so that's the motivation of this character, and so we're willing to go along with him. But if you actually take a step back and look at what he's doing, does that justify all of the murders and the violence and the law breaking? That as long as one American girl is okay, that's the most important thing, is it?
Yeah, well, apparently. But, you know, if you think of it, Star Wars,
yeah,
is, you have the reveal at the end that Darth Vader is the father.
Yes.
His father. So, and all the movie, all the story kind of changes, is put in perspective by that.
Mm.
So you can also say that, you know, it kind of justifies Darth Vader's... I'm trying to open a path for thought here.
Oh, there's definitely a path for thought regarding Star Wars. I mean, God, I've spent many a year of my life
right,
thinking about Star Wars, Cornelio. There's hours and hours of material
and
there.
Now there's other years ahead where you'll have to deal with the new movies that are coming up.
Can't wait for that.
So it's a life well spent, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, to the point is that, yeah, he's a father.
Liam Neeson.
No, Darth Vader.
Darth Vader is.
So that kind of justifies some of his doings.
Because we know that if you're a father, God, that's stressful.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to have a lot of stress. So if you murder a couple of people, that's all right,
okay,
isn't it?
Especially if, you know, you're on that kind of sleepless nights that the young, you know, fathers have.
Yeah.
And that can, you know... if you're deprived of sleep, nobody knows what happened. You switch to the bad side, the dark side of the force.
Could become evil.
Easily.
You're saying that Darth Vader switched to the dark side just because he didn't sleep enough?
I think that was it, the sleepless nights. He couldn't handle that. Because normally you can go back and forth, you know.
Really? Between the good and the dark
sides?
Yeah,
but that's kind of, you're working a tight rope. It's not even a rope, it's a thread.
Yeah.
And I think that was it for him.
So he was like, first of all, I'm not sure I'm willing to go along completely with this theory that Darth Vader turned to the dark side. He turned to evil just because he didn't get enough sleep.
When Luke was a little boy.
I'm sure it didn't help. I'm sure the sleeplessness didn't help. But I think underneath that, there must have been some underlying condition which caused him to flip and turn into a mass murdering, evil overlord of the dark side. I think it wasn't just a case of, oh, I didn't sleep enough. Because I've had times in my life when I haven't been able to sleep, and it hasn't turned me into an evil dictator.
Yeah, but you didn't have babies crying during that time.
True.
So I don't think you can measure that.
Okay.
And, you know, those who have been through that know
that it's perfectly justifiable to then, like, solve problems by... suffocating people.
Absolutely.
By blowing up planets.
Sounds fair, okay. I would say.
All right. Clearly, being a father is much more demanding than I had first imagined. You're a father, aren't you?
Yeah, we should probably explain that this is the case. So I'm talking from experience.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. How old is your daughter?
No, boy.
So, oh, I'm sorry.
It's boy.
Oh, I'm really sorry.
Boy. No, it's fine because you... Oh, you have
I
seen
have
him.
Seen,
you
yeah,
have
I'm seen really sorry. I have seen the baby.
Very small and probably... we didn't...
I've just made a bad mistake.
No.
I got the gender of the baby wrong.
No, it's fine. 13 months.
13 months, yeah, okay.
That's the answer.
So is he crying still? Is he waking you up at night?
Yes, from time to time, but it's. I think it's okay. We've managed to strike a deal.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, listen, mate, if you just keep it quiet, then I'll give you a bit of chocolate every now and then.
Yeah, because I also had to kind of make a deal when he was born.
Yeah.
And that's very tricky, and probably, you know, it's good advice for future fathers, because he kind of was blocked inside. I mean, blocked. He was in a position that was not very easy to. Be born? Yeah,
during just the pregnancy.
Labor. Yeah, pre-labor, let's say.
So he was like the wrong way around.
Yeah.
So the feet came out first, as it were.
No. It was the forehead was in a kind of, but it was head down, but the forehead was kind of blocked.
I see.
And so the doctor said, okay, either he changes position or we'll have to operate.
Oh my God!
And we didn't want that at all. So I'm going to leave you with him for a while, and we'll see in a couple of hours if he changes.
What, the doctor was like, you talk to him?
Yeah, I know. Actually, they said that, you know, talk to him, just to be calm, relaxed, and maybe things will change. And we did that, and I felt like I had to step in and kind of say a few strong words, as Liam Neeson would.
Now, look.
Yeah.
I don't know who you are. In fact, I do know who you are. You're my son. It's time that you came out of the womb. Now stop messing around or I will kill you.
Kind of like that. Kind of like that. And what I said was basically, you know, come out easily and it'll be fine.
Yeah.
We'll work it out. And that I congratulate myself because I didn't make, you know, like in fairy tales, sort of a deal involving, life without death or youth without old age or stuff like that.
You're saying you didn't have to make, you didn't promise him something impossible.
Nothing. No.
What did he do? He's like, hey, come out. We've got Nintendo, Mario.
You know, not even that.
Really?
I just said, you know, it'll be fine. We'll find out some. It'll be interesting. Come out.
Uh-huh.
And I was convincing, and in a couple of hours he had moved, and everything went fine from that point on.
That's great.
And that's because so probably that's where guys like Darth Vader or even Liam Neeson would have fucked it up.
Yeah,
because maybe they would have been pushed by instinct.
Right.
Kind of strike a deal like that.
Like Vader would have said, "Join me," you know. What? Hold on a minute. I'm going to do a Darth Vader
impression. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Just getting into character here.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Luke.
What's your son's name?
It's Alexander.
Alexander. Alexander, join me and we'll rule the galaxy as father and son.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, probably.
So you didn't say that. You didn't give him some. You didn't promise too much. You weren't like, come out and we'll rule the galaxy together as father and son. We'll be the lords of the universe. You just said, come out. It's going to be all right.
Yeah, we'll work it out. So this has two sides. Either, I mean, obviously, I was wise and didn't get into something that'll hold me back for the whole life.
You mean
of us together?
You didn't have a promise that you had to stick to.
And on the other hand, obviously, I wasn't very much of a talker in that moment, and I just said a basic thing that worked, and in the end, you know, if when my son maybe after years and years will find maybe this podcast and will listen to the story, will say, well, that was a lame speech. That was nothing. He had nothing.
You should have written something a lot more impressive than, hey, just come out, it's gonna be fine.
He had nothing.
Right.
Prepared.
So if you had the opportunity to write that speech again as a screenwriter, what would be your inspiration? Like, how would you rewrite that script? The script where you have to persuade your son, your unborn son, to turn into a better position and then come out of the womb of your wife.
Right.
What like speech would you write to do that? This is a very bizarre episode of
it is. I wasn't expecting that, but now that
you don't have to write that,
me.
You don't have to write that script now, Cornelia. What you could do is you could just tell me what would be your inspiration. Would you go for a kind of like, what movie would be your template for that speech? Would you do a Braveheart kind of Mel Gibson freedom, freedom? Would it be that or what?
Well, I was when you said pattern movie, I was thinking of Independence Day.
Okay,
because it's Independence Day is good.
Yeah,
he comes out independent. He's not. He's no longer in the womb. He's fine, and that's his Independence Day.
So you'd go for an Independence Day thing?
Absolutely, very much so. Because I was so marked by that movie.
Yeah,
that it's the speech.
That's the one where, is it Bill Pullman?
Absolutely.
As the president of the president. USA, stands on top of a tank. Is it a tank or a car?
I think so, something military.
And he says, military. Look, there are aliens, but don't worry about it. It's fine because we're all awesome, especially the Americans.
Americans, but we have everybody with us. So this, today, the 4th of July becomes, you know, the day we gained, we all, with the Earth, gained
its independence from the aliens.
That's basically it.
Yeah.
But that was, you know, for me, I remember saw it in Bucharest when it came out, and it was in a huge theater that used to be a place for party congresses in the communist era.
Oh, it was like a communist sort of party head office for big communist party conferences.
It was a big theater conference room and concert hall.
That's where the communists would, back in the day, would have gathered together to be all communist and make big speeches.
Yeah, the congresses. And they were using that a lot because it offered a good display. But at that point in the 90s, they were showing movies there. New movies, because it was a huge theater. And there was an appetite for American movies that were kind of fresh at that point.
Yeah.
And I saw it there. The room was full. I don't know, hundreds, thousands. I don't know. Probably it's
big audience.
Over 1,000 easily. Mm. And there was the speech and huge applause. Everybody applauded. It was like, you know, the communists came back again, and it was the 80s.
But it was
the applause was could have only been matched by those, you know,
those speeches in the communist era.
Yeah.
But it's ironic, isn't it? Because that speech by the president in Independence Day is very sort of capitalist. It's the American dream sort of model of ideology. It's the kind of, you know, it's the sort of American freedom liberation vision, isn't it, in that speech?
But that's what people wanted at that point.
Right.
They were craving for that kind of imagery and...
It's very interesting that you're from Romania, because I think it's a very interesting country. It's a very interesting part of the world. You were talking about the communist era, of course, for, you know, up until the 90s. Was it the beginning of the 1990s?
It was till December 89 was the fall of the regime. So practically as the 90s began, so began our new adventure.
Right. So it was, you know... Romania was behind the Iron Curtain, as they say.
Yeah.
Up until right at the end of 1989, when the regime went down, and then boom, sort of like the place opened up to so many other things.
You
ended up sitting in theaters watching Independence Day, for example.
That was a few years later, but yeah, you can go from one to another. Also, I would point out that at that time, 89, it was Milli Vanilli were revealed to be a fraud. So it was kind of the same moment.
Same level of shock.
Just for people to have a reference, because it was kind of, it's comparable. And
certainly in America. I mean, listeners, do you know who Milli Vanilli are or were? They were a pop duo, two of them. They were twins, weren't they?
Not really. No. I don't think so. No, they were completely different. I mean, from different backgrounds, I think.
Okay, all right. Anyway, they were these pop stars who were hugely successful in the 80s, late 80s. And then around that time, it was revealed that they were fake, because they didn't sing any of their stuff. They didn't record any of it. They were just fake pop stars, and it was like a huge shock.
So he's
saying that this revelation was just as big... It was just as significant as the fall of the Iron Curtain.
Well, if you list the events of 1989, those two would be in the top,
vying for top position.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I see. So was that a big? I mean, obviously, you're joking about the Milli Vanilli thing. Yeah. Although
they were big, because there was there was no vast knowledge of pop music and culture in Romania till. Late 89, so all that opened up in 1990, and we got all that kind of music, and the obvious references to me are MC Hammer, Snap, Milli Vanilli.
So wait a minute. After years and years of nothing,
exactly.
The first thing you got is MC Hammer.
Yeah,
that's terrible, Connie Lee.
And Vanilla Ice.
And Vanilla Ice.
I was forgetting Vanilla Ice. Although Jesus. I wrote a screenplay around that idea of, you know, Vanilla Ice influencing Romania in 1990.
You must have thought though when you were like, oh, now we've got like the freedom to listen to all this music. Let's what are they doing in America and in the, you know, the rest of the world? What is this amazing music that they've been listening to? And you put on the radio and it's like do, can't touch this, dude, stop, Hammer Time. And you're thinking, is this it? Is this the best that they could do?
Well, I think people liked it, you know, because these guys then came, and even now you want to have a huge success in Romania with a concert.
Yeah.
You would book any of those guys.
Really? Yeah.
You would fill up that room that I told you about, the communist conference. Well, and actually it happened with like guys like Ace of Base, which were also, you know, pop artists at that time. And of course, well, the major event was Michael Jackson coming in 92. Yeah. And that was a first class event because it was considered one of his best concerts, actually. And it was, I think, edited in DVD, and it was really an event. Mm,
yeah.
That was, you know, the bright side.
I could see that. I mean, I could see if Michael Jackson came because he was a cut above the rest. But I don't know, like MC Hammer. But I'm sort of joking a bit, but I'm also not. I mean, from my point of view, you know, being from England, when MC Hammer and a lot of those acts came out, those pop acts from the late 80s and the rest of the 80s, we sort of thought, this is crap, this stuff. I mean, obviously it's brilliant as well. I mean, don't get me wrong, I do like MC Hammer, but I don't hold it in as high. It's not as significant to me in terms of music as some other stuff. You know, there's loads of other things, like, you know, you've got your stuff that came out in the 70s and the 60s when and in the 80s as well, that perhaps you weren't exposed to in Romania. But we, you know, we hold in great esteem, you know, groups like Queen and the Beatles and Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath and all that stuff, you know, the serious sort of pop music, let's say. That's the kind of, and also other bands like The Clash and the, you know, the Sex Pistols and all, the list goes on. So compared to those guys, MC Hammer is just a bit of a joke, really.
Yeah, absolutely. But that, I think that's what's interesting, and it's a comment on the power of pop culture, because you have something crappy. Let's be frank now.
Yeah,
and it becomes irrelevant just because it's placed in a context like that, and now it's associated in the minds of people, even like me, with that time of great change and of great hope. And I think it's interesting. Like now, as I was saying, I was writing a screenplay a few years ago, and even if you do a movie about that time, you'd obviously illustrate it with this kind of songs,
right? The songs of the moment.
Yeah, and this is ironic, but it's the memory. You know, nostalgia now adds value to that kind of songs. And I gotta say, I wasn't paying much attention to that kind of thing then. It was a novelty, but I wasn't into that.
Yeah.
But now I'm interested in that just because of the nostalgic value that they have.
Yeah.
Being associated. And it's not just me, it's the whole generation, I guess.
And there is something about that music, those pop songs, which is still a great joy. I mean, they're throwaway, it's disposable music, it's just not very deep, but it's totally fun and just carefree and exciting and colourful and ridiculous and funny and all these things that perhaps weren't so available to you beforehand.
But if since we're, and you took the discussion in this direction, we were sort of exposed to good music, because all the great bands of the 60s and 70s, that music was available in a sort of under the table manner.
Right.
People were bringing cassettes, discs, and they were copying that and sharing, even selling those on the
on the black market.
Or even the flea market, you would get under the table a few cassettes. Mm. So people knew about that. And you would have bootleg VHS tapes of Pink Floyd's The Wall, for instance. That was one of the movies that traumatized my youth, my infancy, because I remember we gathered, so not everybody had a VCR player.
Mm.
And you would go to the relatives or friends who had that and watch a couple of bootleg VHS tapes, movies or concerts.
Yeah.
And I was very little, I don't know, probably about 8, 10, I don't know.
Yeah.
And saw this, the wall, in it was my uncle's house. He had a lot of those tapes, and so he was very proud to show us that.
Yeah.
And I was very much traumatized by the whole thing was going on there, the cartoons and the live action part.
What was it about it that was traumatic?
Visually it was very they put the kids through the grinding machine.
Yeah, there's the song which is called The Wall, right? And it's we don't need no education, boom, 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 boom,
right,
boom,
right,
boom,
right.
And all in all, it's just another brick in the wall, which is, I find it traumatic as well. I mean, I find it quite a dark and disturbing song. But in the video for that, I mean, it's all about, for example, the way in which a system manipulates people and the way in which, for example, a system, it could be a capitalist system or communist system, but any system which is in place in a country molds people and puts people into boxes or categories, or whatever, and it's ultimately how our freedoms or liberty is sort of compromised by being in some sort of society. All right, and the wall is a symbol of that, and also in the video for the wall, the music video for it, you see this rather sort of surreal, and yet it's like a bad trip. It's like a bad acid trip or something. Yeah. And there's this weird monster. He's a teacher, but he's like a big monster. And there's people walking in lines, and they morph into hammers.
Exactly.
Hammers coming down. And people being put into a meat grinder and being transformed into mince meat. And it's pretty dark.
So all this was kind of, coming towards me. But I'm telling you now, what was the most shocking sequence was you have a guy, a young guy, but I think he's on drugs, and he's kind of the victim, I think, of the capitalist society, probably.
Played by Bob Geldof, I think.
Well, you might know better than me. And he's in a room with his TV, and at some point he just grabs the TV and throws it out the window.
Right.
And it crashes on the ground.
Yeah.
I'm telling you that this was the most terrifying sequence, because we didn't have a color TV.
Oh, right.
And this guy had a color TV, and he was just showing it, throwing it out the window. And that was the most painful, and sad.
I think for us, the image of a rock star or someone throwing a television out of a window and it smashing on the ground, for us that's an incredibly liberating image, because although living and growing up in the capitalist situation, you're constantly being bombarded with commercially driven images on television, commercials or the news or whatever. It's like a kind of propaganda, not necessarily controlled propaganda, but sort of commercial propaganda, which is basically buy this, do this, think in this kind of way, because it's good for our business, ultimately the people on TV, a lot of them, unless it's the BBC and some other institutions, but often commercial television, you just feel like you're being consumed by this capitalist machine. So the image of throwing the TV out of the window is like a way of rejecting all of this sort of cultural imperialism that's coming into your eyes,
right,
and sort of switching it off and just thinking for yourself. So that's actually a liberation for us. But for you, it was at that time.
I mean, obviously now, everybody understood that, even in Romania, or at least most of the, and it didn't take long. Mm. But at that point, there was, we didn't have a color TV, for instance. There was a very old black and white one with lamps. I guess that's the technical term. It's like you have. It was huge, first of all, and there was like this technical parts that had to. They were very sensitive, and some at some point you had to kind of kick the TV to work.
Yeah.
That's pretty well known in the world. But it also took time to light up.
Yeah.
It took about 10 minutes. So if you wanted to see something, actually, you had to calculate in advance 10, maybe 15 minutes to catch a show.
Yeah.
And so you see, there was a sort of fascination with TV. And actually, that's one of the first good things with 1990.
Yeah.
We got a color TV.
All right. And did it improve?
For me, was important.
Did it improve your life?
I guess so, yeah. Very much so. And, you know, another important step in, let's say, the visual literacy of Romania, or filmic literacy, was that we got cable very early in the 90s. I guess by 93.
Yeah.
And 94 was already widespread, which didn't really happen here in France, for instance. This came very late with, you know, these boxes that offer cable. Sort of.
Don't really know. I mean, I'm not sure about the way it's developed in France, but I can tell you in England, we got cable. It came in little bits and pieces. But it's not like, for example, in the US where just boom, everyone had cable.
Yeah.
In England, it's something you had to specially install. A lot of people had satellite dishes. But no, it didn't really come in until probably about 10 years ago, in fact, when everyone got a Freeview box, which entitled them to get about 50 TV channels.
Yeah, yeah.
Some people had satellite TV and cable before that, but it wasn't until about 10 or 15 years ago that everyone got it. Yeah.
So this happened very early, and I think it was very important to expose people to this stuff, and because you were mentioning this, and people understood, those who were able to understand a lot of things earlier by being exposed to all this information.
Right.
And also, for me, what was important, getting a lot of movies through these channels,
yes.
You know? So I was very happy beginning 1993. Mostly, but also 92, because we got in cinemas, we were in sync with, you know, with the world. But now looking back, we're talking mostly about American movies, so you already in cinemas at that point. But on TV, you were able to see a lot of stuff, and since, you know, copyright laws were not so strictly enforced at that point, there was now famous TV channel who started simply by broadcasting archive movies that they got from the archives. So they were from the Cinematheque, they got access to those vaults, and they were simply broadcasting classics all day, and they built a strong audience on that because everybody wanted to see Casablanca at 2 p.m.
Yeah.
With lunch.
So wait a minute. The TV company or the TV institution in Romania had access to these vaults of movies.
This was a private TV channel.
Okay.
Because I don't think the state-owned channel would have done that. I mean, obviously there was something fishy about it even then, but they were, you know, airing all this. I assume they weren't paying any, right, or maybe a little fee to the archives, because they took the prints from there, but they kind of filled their space with that.
Sorry, I'm just wondering which archives. You had national archives?
Yeah, like there was a Cinematheque, which had archives.
Cinematheque?
Yeah.
That's like the that's a nationally owned.
Yeah, like the, you know, like similar as here in France, there's a Cinematheque which has shows, you know, the old movies, and has now a museum. That was also an already well established institution.
It's like the National Film Institution, of Romania. Yeah. They had a collection of Hollywood films.
They had prints of almost everything.
Okay,
and so they used that. But that was okay, because I got a good exposure. It was also, we got what's now Turner Classic Movies.
Turner Classic Movies.
TNT.
TNT, yeah.
And you had a lot of classic movies then on that. So it was like a film school for me.
It must have been, yeah. So that's what sort of really turned you on to movies and ultimately led you to pursue that as a career,
yeah.
You know, as a filmmaker.
Yeah.
What's your favorite film, Cornelius?
Well, I can tell you now what my favorite film is, but what was very important then in this path that you're kind of sketching here was seeing in cinemas Sir Richard Attenborough's Chaplin.
Richard Attenborough's Chaplin with Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, with the role that made him famous.
Yeah.
So that was for me an event because, you know, it showed a glimpse of history, this myth that I was obviously aware of, but I didn't put into a historic perspective.
So this is a film about Charlie Chaplin. It's like a documentary, not a documentary,
biopic. Yeah.
About Charlie Chaplin starring...
Robert Downey Jr. And that was written by a very famous screenwriter, William Goldman.
Okay.
Who talks about this adventure. Obviously, he loved the picture. The picture came in a bit flawed now, and the reviews pointed out that, but...
There were some problems with the film.
Apparently, there was... Because Goldman wanted to focus on some stuff, but Richard Attenborough wanted, let's show this episode too, let's illustrate this part of his life.
Yeah.
And obviously, when you take somebody from cradle to being rolled out in a wheelchair to get his Oscar in 77, it's a lot for a movie.
Yes.
It's a show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can't cover like such a big life as Charlie Chaplin in just, 100 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And
so there was some difficulty between the producer and the director over what they wanted to focus on in the film.
Director and screenwriter, but that's, you know, this stuff that the movie, I think, was received with a lot of interest.
Yes.
There was a lot of expectation. And that wasn't met on all levels.
Right.
They waited years, I think, to get the approvals to the permission to do such a movie. And there were a lot of, I remember, famous actors who wanted the role, didn't get it. Like, I think famously, Robin Williams, Dustin Hoffman tried for the part.
Yeah.
And, of course, this unknown guy, Robert Downey, got it.
Yeah.
So the movie is a mixture of sort of in-depth look at his work and obviously the his life made of, life problems with all the wives and all the scandals and all that.
So what was it about this movie, Chaplin, that grabbed your attention then?
I think, and that's one of his best sides, is that it showed the inside of this very early days of cinema through a very iconic figure.
Yes.
And that prompted me, I would say the day after, to search more in that direction and to read up and bought a lot of books and started kind of exploring this century of cinema and getting a sense of what had been and what it is and sort of putting in a pattern, in a new perspective, all the knowledge that I had accumulated till then, just by going to the cinema, by being an avid moviegoer.
So it's the subject of the film rather than the way in which the story was told. So I mean, if let me say, for example, Martin Scorsese, who we all know as this great director, he talks about his introduction to movies being that he sat in cinemas when he was a kid and so on. And it struck him, I think, in a very, very visual sense that he suddenly was captured by the experience of just the way in which movies work in a visual way.
Right.
But you're talking about, I think, you were introduced to... your introduction to movies was through this film, which taught you about the history of the events life of movie making.
Yeah.
What about do you have a visual sort of thing as well? Are you interested in that?
Because I would have to watch this movie again, and I haven't in years to say was there something visually very striking about that. But talking of visuals, and you mentioned Scorsese, and actually that was a big encounter for me because only probably a couple of years after that, I saw Mean Streets.
Oh, wow.
Which was one of his first movies, and certainly the first one to be successful, and which had already De Niro and Harvey Keitel in it. And visually, that there was something there where you felt the director, you felt that there was some guiding hand, an intention in each frame and in each movement of the camera.
Yeah.
And so that kind of made me aware of another type of doing movies or looking at movies, which is was more involved way than just the historical knowledge of it.
Yes,
and so Scorsese at that point became a big big figure for me, and I watched everything, and then followed with some disappointment his recent movies at that point, and I'm so happy that. This year, when I watched The Wolf of Wall Street, it felt that he was fully 100% the guy that mesmerized me in the early 90s with Mean Streets.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you saw Mean Streets in the 90s,
yeah,
but it was made in the
70s. 72.
Yeah.
That's 72. But
Goodfellas is the 90s one, and that's
Goodfellas
is 1990. Stunning film.
Yeah, that one I saw probably around that time, and then the others I saw in sync with their premieres, like I remember Casino,
yes,
in 95 and all that. So it's he was definitely another big influence.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just thinking. We're approaching the 1 hour mark, and what normally happens at this point is if a podcast goes on longer than an hour, I might divide it into two. So this might be a good moment for me to just sort of take a this might be my edit point between part one and part two.
We can say something of lesser value now and just
I don't know what we could say that would be of lesser value because every word is
golden.
Yeah. I would say perhaps what we can do is try and summarize what we've said. What have we? It's been a very fluid conversation. Let's put it that way. I did actually write some notes. That's the sound of my notes there, where I had some ideas of things that I wanted to cover. But we, as I said at the beginning of the episode, we hit the ground running. We just started talking and we moved in all sorts of different directions. But what are some of the main points that we? What are some of the topics that we've covered in this episode? Cornelia, can you remember?
That we don't know why the Monty Pythons are coming back. We don't know exactly, but there are hypotheses.
I think it may be because of money. But
yeah, I'm leaning towards that.
Yeah.
That I have a very long name, and now I can reveal that between the first name and family name, it's kind of 20 letters.
You've got another name in the middle?
Even not counting that one. Corneliu Dragomirescu is already 20 letters. I can let you know that.
Wow.
Without counting. And I have a middle name, but I won't reveal that one.
Okay,
let's
keep it.
Because we don't have the time.
Okay.
And so that was one point. And then we kind of moved into this. There was an interesting debate around fatherhood and reveals about Luke and Darth Vader, and also about Liam Neeson.
Yeah, that's right. We started talking about the fact that we knew each other from comedy and movies, and you said that I love films, and I often talk about movies in my stand-up comedy shows. And, for example, Liam Neeson in the film Taken.
Yeah.
And you attempted to explain or justify his actions.
Lack of sleep.
By saying it's lack of sleep due to being a father. And then you also used Darth Vader as an example of that, and that maybe he turned to the dark side because he didn't sleep well.
Sure, and then revealed scenes from the birth of my child, Alexander, which I'll probably ask you to edit out because he might find this podcast years from now, and I don't know if he needs to know that.
Really?
I'm going to think about it.
Just let me know.
Yeah.
All right. Just let me know if you genuinely want to remove that from history. Seriously.
No. It's I'm not seriously considering that, but,
You might want to add in some slightly more awesome version of events.
We might come back and re-record that and make him, develop that.
It'll be a bit obvious though, because if we re-record that, it'll, like, the sound quality will be different. So we'll be talking like this, and then at some point it'll just, the sound quality will be different, and then it'll be really obvious. And your son will be a, wait, they edited the tapes. What happened?
Yeah. So that'll mess him up even more. So no, it stays in.
It stays in. Okay, the kid stays in the picture. What else? We also went on to then talk about Romania and the moment when Romania communism fell, and how that opened up the doors to a lot of Hollywood films. And you talked about Independence Day having quite a big effect on you, particularly the speech from Independence Day.
Mostly because of people's reaction to it, not necessarily because of the movie, but the people being completely taken over by it.
Right.
And that's a big moment.
That then brought us into the sort of the history of your love of films, talking about the movie Chaplin and how that taught you about cinema's history. And then Scorsese's movies and how they taught you about the visual impact that a movie can have. And then here we are.
Yeah.
Taken us to this point. What I'd like to do in the next part, Cornelio, is talk to you about your experiences of learning English.
Right.
And you've got some interesting things to tell me about your experiences of learning English as a kid. And then also I want to come back to the subject of Romania, because I think there are things that I'd like to ask you regarding stereotypes of Romania, things that people think they know about Romania, and also this issue of migrant workers from Romania and your neighbouring country, Bulgaria, coming into Europe, because Europe, at the beginning of this year, opened its doors to workers from Romania and Bulgaria. And in the media and in politics, there was a lot of there are lots of people sort of with strong opinions on this subject.
Right.
The main opinion seeming to be from sort of right-wing politicians and newspaper editors saying things like, what's going to happen is there will be a flood of migrant workers from Romania and Bulgaria, and these people have such terrible working conditions in their countries that they're all going to flood the UK and, you know, European nations, and they're going to steal our jobs, and it's the end of civilization as we know it.
Yeah.
So that's the criticism that was levelled at the decision to let Romanians and Bulgarians come into Europe. And I'm going to talk to you about whether or not, or how much that is bullshit.
Right. Oh, this sounds great, like a good plan for another episode. And it also, basically what you're saying is, I'd like us to talk about more meaningful stuff.
No, we can. And as ever on Luke's English Podcast, I like to try and mix the meaningful and the meaningless.
Yeah, I know. No, it's just kidding. But, you know, it's like, okay, people need to learn something from this.
I think that hopefully the experience of just listening and trying to stay engaged.
Yeah.
Is the learning process. It's a question of the acquisition of language, and also a question of training one's ears to fluent English.
Absolutely.
As it's actually spoken, and also a question of considering what it means to be able to communicate in an effective way in English. And also, having you on the podcast, I hope, is some sort of living evidence and reminder of the fact that English as a second language is, you know, valid in the same way as English as a first language. That's I hope my point.
Sure.
That you're a living example of someone who's learned English to a high standard as a second language.
Yeah.
And that we can still talk nonsense about films, and we can still talk in a nonsensical and in a sensical, if that's a word, way. Without
it is now.
Without being born speaking English.
Absolutely. No, people can take something from this episode, and maybe, it's my hope, people will think twice here in the Western world before throwing their TV set of the window.
Yeah.
Because there might be somewhere in the world, in Africa, we don't know, a kid craving for that TV set.
Yeah.
So people just, you know, put it in a box and mail it to somebody who needs it.
I can't imagine a rock star like in a hotel room. He's drunk, he's high, and he's got the groupies there, and he's like, "Oh, I'm so awesome to be alive. And what am I going to do? He's going to throw his TV set out the window in a moment of passion, and then he goes, "No, wait, I'm going to package this. I'm going to send it by recorded delivery to Africa."
Yeah,
I don't think that a rock star is capable of doing
that. I think that's the drummer in the group.
Yeah,
he has time to think about all this.
Mm-hmm.
He would be the one. No, let's make a gesture here.
The drummer is always the most irresponsible member of the
but
group.
In our story, he's the responsible person.
Okay, we're going.
He brings on change.
We're flipping the convention here. Yeah. At Luke's English Podcast.
Right.
Okay. Ladies and gents, that's it for this episode, but we will be back with part two, which should be available on your computer or your device or wherever in your ears very soon. So stay tuned for that. But for this episode, it's goodbye. And it's normal for me to go bye, 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 like that in a sort of echoing, I don't know what. That's a sort of like, imagine I'm saying goodbye and it's echoing and I've got the thing going through a sound effect unit.
Right, which you can't afford.
Which I can't actually afford, yeah. Which I have to do with my voice.
Yeah.
So that's what I do. Do you want to say goodbye, bye, bye with me?
I'm going to try it, yeah. Okay, we might be out of sync, but this is why we have a second episode for.
Just, yeah, exactly. Just collaborate. Just improvise. You can do whatever you like, and that's fine. So, ladies and gents, thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast, and I'll speak to you again very, very soon. But for now, it's goodbye.
Bye. Bye, 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 bye.
Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.